Steel bars closed off both sides of the corridor, and more had slid into existence along the walls when he hadn't noticed, probably when the Vulcan was blasting.
There's no way out of this that I can see. There's no lock to pick or keypad to short out.
Pity young Dean is no longer with us. He could have easily slipped out between these bars.
Now, what good would that do? We need to liberate everybody, not just one of us.
Jack dropped his backpack and started to remove his boots, then the rest of his clothing. In a few moments, the teenager was stark naked and forcibly throwing himself at the smooth bars. Sheer momentum got Jack halfway through before he became stuck. Wiggling, the teenager gained another inch, but then stopped, unable to advance or to retreat.
Exhale deeply. Contract your chest.
Grimacing unhappily, Jack did as requested, as JB put two hands on the teenager's shoulders and started to push. Then, with a lurch, Jack came free and tumbled down the corridor.
Well done, lad. The legendary Count of Monte Cristo could not have done better.
Jack rubbed his scraped chest. His skin was already starting to show a few bruises. Christie passed the teenager his clothes, the Colt, and the gun belt.
Now what? Head for the garage and find a crowbar.
I don't think a crowbar will lift these. And there's no way you could drive a Hummer down here to try to ram the bars, even if there is one on the garage level.
Got no choice. Best light candles.
Turning, the teen started at an easy lope down the corridor toward the waiting elevator.
Use gloves if you got any.
Pausing at the corner, Jack waved in understanding, then dashed out of view.
Candles? Oh, hell. He's going to try to cut the power to the whole redoubt. Think that will also open the deep storage unit?
Frowning deeply, Ryan turned to stare at the giant portal.
Sure as hell hope not. But we better get hard just in case.
Long minutes passed as the companions prepared for a close-quarter firefight. If the locker door automatically opened and a Sec Hunter droid came rolling out, Ryan was probably the only person in real danger. The droids weren't armed with distance weapons, that the companions knew about at any rate. Protected by the thick steel bars, everybody would be safe from the deadly war machine except Ryan. Trapped between the cage and a locker, he would only have a few yards in which to try to outmaneuver the killer bot. His only defense would be the combined firepower of the trapped companions.
All for one and one for all.
Do we look like the Three Musketeers?
There were four of them, actually.
Oh, I know that. Kiefer Sutherland, Oliver Platt, Charlie Sheen, and the other guy. You know, the one that played Robin in that horrible Batman movie?
What in the name of God are you babbling about, madam?
Suddenly, the ceiling lights flickered and went out. The air vents slowly stopped blowing, and a deafening silence filled the subterranean military base.
Here we go.
A flicker of light stabbed into the darkness as Ryan applied the flame of his butane lighter to a wax candle stub. As the wick caught, he set the candle near the wall, and the reflected illumination cast flickering shadows across the people in the cage. Reaching into her med kit, Mildred pulled out a survivalist flashlight and worked the small pump on the handle to charge the old batteries. Then she flicked the switch, and the device gave off a weak yellow glow. She had gotten the flashlight from a baron quite a while back as a reward for saving his son's life. The battery was rechargeable, but there were no spare light bulbs, and the last bulb was starting to die. However, the flashlight still gave off 10 times the power of a wax candle. As Christy and Doc also retrieved butane lighters and got more candles going, JB fumbled in his munitions bag and pulled out a pre-dark road flare. Twisting off the cap, the armorer scraped the magnesium nubbin underneath, and the stick sputtered, almost seeming to go out for a moment. But then the chemical flame returned, bright and strong, the flare giving off a tremendously bright reddish flame, along with a great amount of dense, sulfurous smoke. Mildred shied away from the sputtering flare.
Good thing the fire detectors aren't working. Jeez, that thing stinks.
Still works, though.
Reaching through the bars, JB tossed the flare outside the cage, and the thick smoke rose upward to pool on the ceiling, the dark fumes flowing along the white tiles like a living thing.
Okay, let's see if we can hoist this.
Ryan grabbed two of the bars in his big hands. The man twisted his fists on the smooth steel to try to get a good grip.
Ready?
He braced his boots on the floor. He tensed his legs and back.
All together now. One, two, three.
The companions heaved with all of their combined strength, and the gate lifted easily and without resistance.
Son of a bitch! The grating must use a maglock. With the power gone, it's dead easy to open.
Stepping into the cage, Ryan let the gate slide back down, then crossed over and experimentally lifted the other side with a single finger.
Come on. We need to find something strong enough to use as a prop under these. With the juice turned off, we can't use the keypad to get through the door of the locker. Besides...
Suddenly, bright lights came on overhead, flooding the corridor with rods of sharp illumination that marked the exit door to the stairwell and a couple of empty wall niches that probably should have held fire extinguishers. Christie cast a glance at the closed door.
Yeah, backup power. Sometimes I forget that the redoubts clean and repair themselves. The main power will come back on any time.
Leaving the candles on the floor, the companions headed for the stairs. Along the way, J.B. pulled out his butane lighter and lit the end of his cigar. He knew that Mildred really disliked the habit, but there was a rare time when a man needed a good smoke. Their blasters at the ready, the group started up the stairs, with Mildred giving J.B. a stern, disapproving look that the armorer did his best to totally ignore. Reaching the top level, Ryan checked for any traps, but found the entrance clear. Pushing open the partly closed metal door with the barrel of his hand cannon, Ryan stepped into the garage and looked around, his scarred face slowly smiling. The emergency lights were working here, too, casting a zigzag pattern of illumination. The entire floor was filled with military wags, all of them parked in a wild jumble over the neat lines on the concrete flooring. Several of the vehicles seemed to have collided near the exit tunnel, their hoods crumpled and headlights smashed. But the rest of the wags were intact, including several Hummers and a LAV-25 armored transport. He didn't stop to wonder why such a barren redoubt had so many vehicles in its garage. Moving past the maze of vehicles, Ryan went to the wire enclosure of the storage room, shot off the padlock, and yanked open the mesh door. Inside were dozens of spare tires and burnished steel rims in assorted sizes, along with stripped engine blocks, cases of headlights, sealed pallets of nuke batteries, and everything else needed to keep the fleet of military wags in proper working condition, along with about a dozen heavy-duty jackstands. Ryan grabbed a couple of them.
Everybody take a pair. These things will hold about half a ton. Those gates can't be putting out too much more pressure than that, or else the floor would crack. A dozen of these should do the job.
Sure hope so.
JB slung the Uzi across his back to take a pair of the bulky triangular stands. The things were damn heavy, but even with his backpack he could handle the weight. Holstering their weapons, Doc and Christie each took two stands. Awkwardly, Mildred managed to lift one, cradling it to her chest, and obviously struggling to keep from dropping it.
Set it down, Mildred. One of us has to stay armed.
No problem there.
The pre-dark physician thankfully set down the jack stand, and straightening her back, pulled out her ZKR revolver and thumbed back the hammer. Returning to the cage on the lower level, the companions easily lifted up the powerless gates, lined up the jacks on the floor, and set the gates into place. Doc pulled out his Lama before heading for the stairs.
I shall go inform Jack.
The other companions waited impatiently. But pretty soon the fluorescent lights strobed in the ceiling, and then came back on at full force. In gradual stages, the emergency lights died away, and the two gates along the walls crashed back down into position. As two main gates tried to forcibly descend once more, the row of jackstands stood in their way. JB took out his stogie and blew a smoke ring at the smashed ruin of the speaker.
Bet that intruder alarm would be howling like crazy now.
Ryan warily studied the cage and stands. For just a second they seemed to quiver, but then it was gone. Probably just a trick of the fluorescent tubes.
Those appear to be holding. What do you think?
Pivoting, Christie kicked the steel bars as hard as she could with the heel of her cowboy boot.
Yeah, that'll hold.
Inhaling deeply, Ryan lay down and crawled along the floor between two of the jackstands, across the cage and out the other side. Standing, he waited for the others to pass through. A few minutes later, Doc and Jack arrived and slipped through to join the rest of the companions.
Good work.
No prop.
Going over to the broken Vulcan minigun, JB checked the enclosed feed and yanked out a cotter pin. Something disengaged, and the armorer removed the rectangular tube of louvered steel. Removing a cartridge from inside, he inspected the brass, then used a knife to cut off the lead bullet and poured the powdery contents of the round into his palm.
We can use this. Even if the Deeper has been looted, at least we'll have some reloads. 200, maybe 300 rounds.
Good.
Jack stood, then pulled out his Colt Python.
Let's open the door.
As the companions approached the frosty portal, a wave of cold swept over the group, but this time it only generated a sense of excitement. Pulling out some tools, JB did a pass over the door jamb and declared it clear of booby traps and sensors. Without a word, Ryan went to the keypad and tapped in the usual sequence that opened blast doors that led to the outside world and all redoubts. The indicator on top of the keypad flashed red, yellow, then green. They could hear the internal locks disengaging, and soon the truncated door ponderously swung aside. With a mighty exhalation, a bitterly cold mist flowed out to block the sight of the companions for a few anxious moments. Ryan and the others tensed impatiently as the warmth of the corridor slowly dissipated the chilling fog. The interior of the locker was pitch black. Pulling out his last road flare, JB started to scratch it alive when lights rippled across the ceiling of the locker. Row after row of bright tube lights came on until the inside of the Deeper was fully illuminated. The glare was almost painful.
Bingo!
Hundreds of packing crates came into view. The locker was stuffed full of stored equipment, the plastic shelving along the walls packed solid with military cases designed for long-term storage and airtight ammo drums, 55-gallon barrels that held a lifetime of brass for most vills. Wooden crates wrapped in thick plastic sheeting were stacked to the ceiling in huge pyramids, and banks of cabinets formed orderly rows along the spotlessly clean floor. Staying in combat formation, the companions eased into the locker, their weapons searching for targets. Just because a Sec Hunter droid didn't come rolling out instantly didn't mean the machines weren't waiting for them somewhere.
This place has 100 times more supplies than the Alaskan redoubt.
Oh, thank Gaia. And no madman in charge trying to ace us.
Okay, everybody stay in pairs. Just because something didn't try to stop us at the door doesn't mean we're safe. Hunt for Grenz first. After that, go for ammo. Then food. You all know the list.
Got him!
He pulled out a knife and sliced through the tough plastic sheeting around a stacked tray of military Grenz. The clear polymer resisted, but the teen finally hacked through and started to yank the resilient sheeting aside. Gently lifting off the top tray, Jack beamed in delight at the neat rows of colored spheres resting in gray foam cushioning. The color of the stripe said these were high-explosive Grenz, steel shrapnel. Those were the best kind to find, because the Grenz could be used for everything from chilling muties to freshwater fishing. Mildred had once told Jack about a type of military Grenz that had used plastic shrapnel that could not be seen on an X-ray machine. Weapons designed to maim, not kill. The concept was beyond foul. Somehow, it felt almost cowardly.
Dark night. Now we're talking.
JB happily removed his cigar and grounded out on the floor before approaching the massed explosives. Grinning eagerly, Jack started passing out the Grenz. Everybody tucked several into their backpacks, and then a few more into their coat pockets. When the rest of the companions were done, JB went to the next tray down and added a dozen more spheres to his munitions bag. The weight of the Grenz felt reassuring after being absent for so many months. The armorer always felt vulnerable when he was out of Explos. There were few problems in the Deathlands that couldn't be solved with the adroit application of high explosives.
Ammo next.
I'm going to hunt for medical supplies.
Mildred took off at a run among the stacks of crates.
Stay in pairs.
I got her.
Checking his blaster, the armorer followed after the stocky woman, already racing into the maze of green metal cabinets. Cutting open the seal on a sturdy trunk, Christy hesitantly lifted the heavy lid. Inside were shiny metallic Mylar envelopes.
MRE packs! Hundreds of them! Enough for an army!
Excelsior!
Doc lifted a burnished aluminum box. Laying the container on a work table, the scholar began pulling out sealed plastic jars of grainy black powder and clear plastic jars of fine-grain gray gunpowder, the slick material appearing almost oily as it moved. There were several boxes of lead rods for melting into bullets, and even a small assortment of pre-made balls. None of them were the right caliber for the Lama, but Doc had enough for a couple of reloads already. He wisely took some extra lead and all of the copper percussion nipples that he could find. Jack looked over the man's shoulder. He pointed to an open cabinet filled with cardboard boxes.
Why not get a real blaster? Boxes of 44 wheel guns over there. Plenty of brass, too.
Doc's hands were busy purging the spent chambers of his Lama as a preliminary to reloading.
Let the artist choose his own brush. This has served me well, and I seek no other mistress.